today on this episode of the PeerDirect Special Spotlight.
But really, a lot of the questions come down to, what does the patient understand? Is the patient going to take this medication? How do they feel about this? Things like adherence and patient understanding, I think, are very important.
Today, Drs. Wise and Stahl join the podcast to discuss bringing it to the bedside, humanistic care and reproductive health in lupus, in this PeerDirect Specialist Spotlight. All opinions expressed are those of the presenters and do not necessarily reflect the views of this educational initiative's supporters.
Hello, I'm Dr. Leanna Wise in the Division of Rheumatology, University of Southern California, Keck School of Medicine in Los Angeles, California.
And I'm Dr. William Stahl, also in the Division of Rheumatology, University of Southern California, Keck School of Medicine in Los Angeles.
Thank you for joining me today, Billy.
Leanna, it's a delight to be with you.
So, Billy, when I think about treating patients with lupus, we have an amazing wealth of data over the last several decades, really, and we have some very promising therapies on the horizon, new ways of checking for lupus nephritis earlier than maybe we would detect otherwise. But really, a lot of the questions come down to, what does the patient understand? Is the patient going to take this medication? How do they feel about this? Things like adherence and patient understanding, I think, are very important. We have, again, these amazing modalities, but what does it really matter if a patient is not taking it or is hesitant, and we haven't really met the patient where he or she is at? And I'm also thinking of lupus being a disease that is primarily affecting women of childbearing age. One of the issues that comes up that maybe makes patients particularly hesitant to take our medications or maybe just a little more concerned in general is how it may affect their reproductive health. Whether that is planning for a family or using the appropriate type of contraception, et cetera. These are issues that are very important to address in the clinic, whether it's through good rapport, chatting with them about these things proactively, et cetera. And we're going to talk about this a little more, but I wanted to just get your perspective, especially maybe on the 2020 guidelines, which were the first guidelines ever put out by the ACR on this. Can you just tell me a little bit your thoughts on this and maybe how the landscape has changed in the last few years, several years?
So again, I'm a little bit older than you are, so I've been around for a little bit longer. For many years, we've been speaking about the science of medicine, and we've been speaking about the art of medicine, but I think what we have not done sufficiently and hopefully are starting to do is speak about the humanism of medicine. And as you pointed out, we can develop all sorts of high-fangled, fancy therapies, effective therapies for our patients, but if they don't understand why it is that we're giving it to them, if they're not willing to take it, then all of that is for naught. Mm-hmm. So work that many have done, including yourself, have addressed this issue, and perhaps now it might be a good time for you to summarize some of the recent findings that you have published.
Thank you, Billy. I appreciate that as a segue. I do want to say just globally, from a big picture perspective, with many prior studies, we do know that discussions about contraception, family planning, do individuals want to have a child or not, we know that these are very deficient in general. Largely, this is not a topic that is brought up quickly with patients right after they're diagnosed. For sure, there's exceptions. There are some clinicians or even patients who are very proactive about this. But in general, this is not a front burner issue. This is a back burner issue because disease activity usually steals the show. In our data from our county hospital, we saw this as well from a qualitative perspective. Hands down, patients felt that their discussions with clinicians, whether they were English-speaking or Spanish-speaking, were very deficient as it related to reproductive health. We have a lot of areas in which we can improve, but patients really appreciate these discussions when they have them. They go a long way. It's not just an afterthought. The patients need and want these over and over, not simply a binary question of, do you want children in the next 1 year? What contraception are you taking? Patients want to please us. They might tell us what they think we want us to hear, but ultimately they want to have in-depth, nuanced discussions, not simply, okay, you should get pregnant right now or you shouldn't. They want to know, well, why not? What are the risks? When could I get pregnant? What type of contraception is safe or isn't safe? My friend told me about this type of contraception. Can I use this? Et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot of nuances involved here, and sometimes patients just feel maybe awkward or that it's taking too much time to ask this, or they're hearing disparate information from friends or other clinicians. So I think this is a very important issue. And as you've mentioned, we have a lot of great science, but does it really matter once the patient's not even willing to take the therapy because they're concerned about a big picture problem? And then along those same lines, Billy, it also makes me think of issues relating to adherence. And adherence is so multifactorial. I don't want to just blame a patient and say, oh, you're non-adherent, and put that in the chart, or just kind of walk away frustrated. What are some of your thoughts as to why non-adherence exists, maybe even what we can do to maximize it?
So adherence, or I should say non-adherence, is a major problem. For physicians such as myself, again, I've never been a woman. I never will be a woman. I've never been pregnant. I never will be pregnant. I've never given birth to children. I never will give birth to children. So it becomes a especially difficult issue for a male rheumatologist to deal with a female patient who is contemplating pregnancy. You, on the other hand, are very much a woman. You have been pregnant. You are a mother. And perhaps you can give those of us who are of the male persuasion some insights into how we should approach our patients who are contemplating pregnancy.
From our study with our group at the county hospital, which was about 30 patients, from a qualitative, semi-structured interview perspective, many did like having female physicians, but that was not required to have a good reproductive health conversation. They wanted good rapport. They wanted physicians who asked a little more in-depth questions, who were just addressing this topic frequently, naturally. And again, it was really just about rapport. Yes, it was nice to have, you know, a younger female fellow or something like that, but ultimately many of them spoke very highly about a doctor that they perceived to care about them and was invested. So I don't think it's required to be a female to be a good humanistic doctor. And I think to deal with issues like reproductive health, trying to probe into how can we improve upon adherence, making sure that the patient can open up to us. The data shows us we can do that. All types of clinicians can do that when they're putting that just little bit of extra effort forward.
I will have to pass that word along to our male colleagues. But in more broadly, even when a patient is not pregnant or not contemplating pregnancy, adherence or non-adherence is a major problem. Mm-hmm. Have your studies been able to address some of those issues?
Mm-hmm. We've just touched on that briefly, and there have been some patients reporting adherence to a physician's face in the clinical perspective, but then they do acknowledge, I'm not adherent, I just wanted to please the doctor. We haven't explored that in depth. That might be room for another qualitative project, but I think that is something that may exist. From a big picture perspective, when we look at other data surrounding adherence in the lupus community, unfortunately, the populations that have the biggest burden of lupus also have the most adherence concerns. These are individuals who are of non-white background, already have a lot of disease activity, damage, medications that they're taking, polypharmacy, or potentially having lupus for a longer period of time. These are already the individuals who are going to have the worst outcomes from lupus, yet they have the highest proportions of non-adherence. And also lower socioeconomic status has been correlated with this too. So I think it's important for the clinician just to remember that these are the patients. Yes, they are complex, but they actually are the ones who need the best communication. They need the most TLC in order to maximize their medication use. What is difficult about these medications? Just like you said, it doesn't matter if they want to be pregnant or not. Could be a male patient, whatever. Help them understand the importance of these medications and give that 1 or 2 minute extra, if possible, in clinic to talk about the need for these medications.
Nowadays, with the 15-minute patient visits, that becomes increasingly difficult. But again, we have to remember that we are not just practitioners of science or of art, but we are humanists. Mm-hmm. And we have to always be able to put ourselves in the patient's seat and the patient's shoes and remember that our mission as practicing rheumatologists are to make our patients' lives better. And sometimes that's via medications, and that's sometimes just simply through speaking to the patient and empathizing and understanding, you know, what the patient is facing.
Yeah, I really agree. Just even listening to them goes a very, very long way. Thank you so much, Billy, for joining me today and speaking with me. I really appreciate your input.
And thank you, Liana, for this wonderful conversation. And thank you to our audience for watching.
And that's today's Specialist Spotlight. Thank you for joining us for this episode of PeerDirect Medical News Podcast. For more stories like these, visit us at PeerDirect.com. Thoughts, comments, or suggestions? Please leave us a review on your preferred listening platform or email us at editorial@PeerDirect.com. Listen and subscribe at Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also download our Amazon Alexa Flash Briefing Medical News Roundup and just ask, "What's my flash briefing?" Thanks today to our guests, Drs. Wise and Stahl. Join me next time for an episode where we cover the latest stories in the world of medicine.